Hi, my name's Michelle. I'm from Brisbane, Australia, and I just wanted to say thank you to Real Crime Profile for everything that you've done in the past few years. I've been a listener from the start with Making a Murderer and the analysis of that. I've also worked in the domestic and family violence space, and being able to have the understanding of coercive control that I do now, and also in terms of sexual abuse cases, I always have in the back of my mind thinking of Jim saying indicators of veracity and pillar of the community offenders, and it's just really been woven into my practice as a counsellor and in being able to empathise with victims. So thank you so much for everything that you do, and keep going, and congratulations.
Hey, Jim, Laura, and Lisa. It is Kristen Dilley from the Mind Over Murder podcast, joined by my co-host,
Bill Thomas.
We are so thankful for the wonderful work that y'all have done over your 400 episodes, both on the Colonial Parkway murders case, and we are so thankful that you have been such wonderful podcast mentors to us. We absolutely love every single one of you, and we are so thankful for the work that you have done in the true crime space. Happy 400th episode.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor, and writer producer of CBS's Criminal Minds, and also on Criminal Minds Evolution on Paramount Plus. And with me today is
Laura Richards, criminal behavioral analyst, former New Scotland Yard, founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service, and host of the podcast Crime Analyst.
I'm Lisa Zambetti. I'm a casting director who's cast psychopaths, serial killers, FBI agents, victims, villains of all different kinds. But I really have a true interest in real crime and the real people who solve those crimes. And here we are on Real Crime Profile, 400 episodes later, y'all. Oh my goodness. We have never not dropped an episode in 6 bloody years. Which is an incredible achievement. And I thought that today was just going to be sort of a stroll down memory lane, kind of a laid back episode. But oh my goodness, things are jumping off the walls. And I can't wait to have updates from both of you on some of the cases that we've covered over these past few years that are suddenly just popping up in the news. So please take it away.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. From our humble beginnings, when we were just sort of pulling this together, deciding to do this podcast together and figuring out what our message wanted to be, and being victim-centric and giving victims their voice back after some horrific criminal did horrific things to them. And so what's amazing about this journey has been that, you know, we have actually reached out and touched people's lives. And it hasn't just been an entertainment venue, but it's been an education venue. It's been an experience venue. It's actually helped people get out of terrible situations. We've been able to educate people about things like grooming and sex offender behavior and coercive control. And now, as we've seen in recent documentary series, people are talking about it and put things in the lexicon that were missing before. So it's really amazing. But I can't tell you enough how appreciative I am of you, Laura and Lisa, and the work we've been able to do together, as well as all of our listeners around the world. They've all helped us to make an impact.
So when I think back to when we started, I mean, for one, I can't believe that we're still doing it. There's been a lot of tumultuous stuff that's gone on. So I am, you know, amazed that we're still here 6 years later. When we first began, I remember, Jim, we said we wouldn't know if one person would listen. And we were being asked continuously about Haemin Lee. And I still remember lying on Venice Beach and taking a call from you asking I think, to go on and talk with Bob Ruff about various things on a podcast. And we talked about Heyman Lee again because Serial had really exploded. And right. We, you know, decided that we really wanted to do something ourselves. We didn't quite know what it was at that point, but we wanted to do a podcast. And then, of course, things evolved from there. But I do think it's interesting, Heyman Lee's case and Adnan Syed are back in the news just literally in the last day or so. And I've just done a radio interview on that very case. So it does almost feel like full circle. And we will talk about that. But so much has gone on in between. And I guess initially we wanted to educate people. That's really why we wanted to do it. And thinking all the cases that we've done, I don't even know what the number is. Of course, it's 400 episodes, but we've covered many, many cases. We've really tried to center the victims. And I know our listeners have really appreciated that, particularly as the true crime genre just exploded, or, you know, continues to explode, actually, doesn't it? It's a very fine balance act, isn't it, to ensure that we're not putting them at the center of everything, and we're not giving them further notoriety or oxygen when that's what they're seeking. So we've tried to be balanced, and we've tried to be measured when we are approaching our cases. And of course, we're unscripted, so we never know what the other person will say. So it's been 6 years of clicking on or being in a room with Jim and Lisa, never really knowing what's going to come out of their mouths. And that's been astonishing at times as well, with all sorts of, you know, reasons for saying it's astonishing. But yes, we never know what the other is going to say when we approach a
case.
Well,
it's real. It's real.
Yeah, that's,
and that's why
yeah.
we called ourselves Real yeah. Crime Profile. It's not scripted. It's not produced in a way that we are creating a particular message. We are literally doing our analysis. We're taking questions live. We are actually involving our listeners in the conversation.
That's really, you know, Laura really steered this towards being a victim-centric podcast. Because I remember, you know, it's funny when something's in the zeitgeist, there's all kinds of synchronicity that happens. And, you know, I didn't know Laura at all. And I had only known Jim at Criminal Minds. And Jim, you know, and I've told you this before, you know, when I knew you then, you were so very kind of intimidating, you know, very serious, very quiet. And when I knew you, I only knew you when it was time for your episode to be cast, and we would be in the casting room together. And I was so intimidated to even talk to you.
But I had no idea.
Yeah, but then I would start to ask you, well, first thing I asked you about was the San Bernardino mass shooting that happened, which was such a horrific case. And I could not understand how that had all come down, because if you remember, it was done by a married couple who had been kind of a terrorist cell that had been under the radar,
a sleeper cell,
and they had been married and they had a baby, and then they just did a horrific mass shooting, and they left, and they knew, knowing that they would be probably killed, and they left their baby behind. And I was asking you, why would somebody do that? And you were very patiently explaining to me, you know, like between actors coming in for their audition. And then we did talk about the murder of Heyman Lee. And what I noticed is that you would just light up when you were explaining it to me. And I thought, this is a very different Jim Clemente than I know. And I thought, gosh, I would just love to sit there and just pick your brain and talk to you about cases. And I remember being in that casting room with my former boss and my assistant. And I went up to you and I said, what do you think? You know, would you like to do a podcast? And they were like, Lisa, stop it. You know, and you were like, I would love to do that, but we need to bring my friend Laura into this, because she would contribute so much to the conversation, and no two profilers think the same.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, right around the same time, you know, Bob Ruff had had me on his podcast a couple of times, and he told me, he said, Jim, whenever I have you on my podcast, I always double the listeners. He said, you should do your own podcast. And I was like, yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not really sure what I would do. And I'm pretty busy these days, you know, with Criminal Minds and other things. And then you came up to me, Lisa, and asked me that. And I said, let's call Laura. And we all got together in our studio. And Bob Ruff was our first guest.
He was basically our coach. I mean, yes. He would come in and give us a thumbs up and go, you guys are doing great, you know.
He was already an icon in the podcast world. So yes, he definitely helped us a tremendous amount. And also, I remember sitting there and trying to figure out what we would call this podcast. And we wanted to be different than that. We wanted to actually talk about the real stories and the real victims, the real cases, and give real learning points so that people could actually listen and be entertained, but also be educated. And that's, I think, the difference between Real Crime Profile and other podcasts that are called true crime.
It's so funny talking about Bob, because just literally an hour ago, I posted the interview, Jim, that we did on February the 13th, 2016. Do you remember that interview that we deconstructed Jay Wilde's interview, recorded interview with the police? And Bob came, I believe it was to your house, and neither of us had listened to this interview. And we sat down and he pressed play and we sat there with our notebooks and independently we went through our analysis in writing first. And then Bob asked us, we went into the studio without us conferring and Bob asked us what, I mean, it was amazing just re-listening to that interview because A, I totally forgot that we did it.
Well, you just reminded me too.
Definitely have a listen to it because it's to the heart of Haemin Lee's case and Adnan Syed because Jay Wilde's evidence, in inverted commas, his statement, his testimony was a key plank of the prosecution case, right. Of why Adnan Syed's been in prison for 23 years. And it was just fascinating listening back to what we said. And I'd given a shout out. I did an interview with BBC Radio 5 Live, and I gave a shout out to Rabia Chowdhury and the Undisclosed team. And I suddenly remembered Bob. And it just popped into my head. And so I altered all of our social media to include Bob and that interview because it was a really important interview.
Absolutely.
And Bob actually said at the end of it, so to our listeners, definitely listen to it. He didn't number his episodes, but it's February the 13th, 2016. You'll find it. It says Jim Clemente and Laura Richards. And Bob says at the end of it, wow. Jim and Laura just blew me away. I had no idea what they were going to say, but it's clear to me that Jay Wilde was lying. This has just blown open the whole case. So, you know, it's just such a full circle, this conversation now. And
it's amazing.
You just said you're going to bring Bob on, which, you know, again, it was just serendipity, really, that I had just listened to that interview and posted about it.
Lisa, Jim, and Laura, congratulations on 400 episodes. I listen to you from Nova Scotia, Canada, and I want to say thank you first to Laura for the never-ending work you do on behalf of women around the world. You've given us language, insight. You've allowed us to understand what has happened to us in the past and what we will not allow to happen to us in the future. And as the mother of a 24-year-old woman, I am grateful that I have that language and that insight now. Jim, your outrage and your sense of justice just gives me goosebumps sometimes. And I so appreciate your service and I appreciate your insight and your passion for justice. And Lisa, you're the voice that asks the questions that the rest of us wish we were in the room to ask. So thank you for always pushing the conversation forward, for your insight, and for your insightful questions. So congratulations, all three of you. You truly do a service. There's nothing sensational about your podcast. It's information, and it is helping all of us to better understand so many aspects of this modern world. So thank you. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Laura, tell everybody about the news today. I mean, this is going to be posting a week from today, but tell everybody what happened today and what's the significance of today's, what possibly may happen.
Regarding Adnan Syed and Haemin Lee? Mm-hmm. Well, it was actually a motion that was written by the state yesterday that was published, which is requesting that Adnan Syed's conviction is vacated. Now, that's really significant. It's written by the state. So this is what the defense have been fighting for over and over again, Adnan Syed's lawyers and Rabia Chowdhury's team. And having read that motion and listened to Rabia, it really is, you know, significant in the sense that, and Jim, I don't know how much knowledge you have about it, but one of the key things that the state have made mention of in that 20-page motion is that there were two alternative suspects at the time, one of whom had a motive to kill Haemin Lee and said that he would kill her and he would disappear her. And that was witnessed by somebody else. And this was known to the prosecution at the time, but they failed to disclose that to the defense. And moreover, one of those suspects has a conviction for rape and sexual assault and attacked a woman in a car. And additionally, one of the suspects' relative lived in the house where close to where Haemin Lee's body and car was found. So there's a significant anchor point there as well. So there's clearly a Brady violation here, right? That they didn't
absolutely
notify the defense team. And it probably would have had a significant impact on the jury. That's just one key aspect to me of many others that were highlighted within that motion. The others are that suspects were never ruled out significantly for me. And I remember it now, the person who found Haemin Lee's body. They never ruled him out. And there were others too. But also, there are just lots of issues which show that at the very least, Adnan Syed should get a new trial, at the very least.
Right.
No matter what you think about his whether he's guilty or innocent, right? There are clear, abundant issues with the prosecution case.
And then there's also the sort of erstwhile boyfriend that Haemin was seeing, and whose time card, if I'm not mistaken, was falsified. And then it was determined that the person that made out his time card was his mother, and that saying that he was working at a shop that apparently he didn't work at. And so there's a lot of issues. I mean, Jay and the indications of lying in his testimony is one big issue, but to have the prosecution not disclose potential suspects, Brady violations are the most ridiculously consistent violation. I mean, why do people think that they can get away with this? That, to me, is a crime. That if they literally deliberately withheld that information, the prosecution, that's a crime. They shouldn't be doing that.
Why would they want to? Is the same prosecutor still in place then? So wouldn't a new regime want to clear the decks and right the wrongs?
Well, that's apparently what's going on right now.
That's what this investigation is. I mean, it's been a year-long investigation by Miss Mosby, who has really sort of led the charge here. And, you know, as well as Dom, Jim, you mentioned the boyfriend at the time. You know, Jay was obviously a key part to that prosecution case. We listened to his recorded interview. It's very clear that he changed his account multiple times.
Yeah.
We believe that, you know, he might lightly have been threatened or coerced. He was certainly given information.
Or at least coached, yes.
Yeah, or at least coached. And so he's not a reliable witness. That's a major problem. You'll remember the cell site analysis was a major problem as well, and the data. Right. There's all sorts of big holes, which, you know, I believe Miss Mosby's trying to get to the bottom of. And this investigation has not concluded, so it's still ongoing. But they are asking for Adnan to be sent home in the meantime whilst the investigation concludes. So to me, it's not an exoneration in its entirety, but it is really important. There's an ongoing investigation that the state have been investing in. So it's amazing, really, that 23 years on, and I know Rabia and the team have been here before and been excited, and then they've been very disappointed. And I'm sure Bob Ruff has a view on this as well. This incredible.
And I think we'll probably hear it right now. How you doing, Bob?
Hi, Bob.
How's it going, guys?
Welcome back to Real Crime Profile.
Congratulations, three of you. This is awesome. 400 episodes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob.
We're really excited. And honestly, I mean, we just spent the last 20 minutes singing your praises. So,
I might as well leave now before blow everybody's expectations.
Might as well drop the mic. Just drop the mic. But Bob, honestly, you made it possible. You were a mentor for us. You were an inspiration for us. And certainly all your fans and all the work you did and the people that you helped exonerate and the cases that you've investigated just unflinchingly, and the people you've gotten to speak and to also do actions. You've been such an inspiration to us, and that's a real big part of why Real Crime Profile even exists.
Well, I appreciate that. I didn't know that this was a party for me. I would have dressed better.
You look like you were crying there, Bob. Were you getting emotional? A bit emotional? I was tearing up.
I was going to go like do this all in my studio. And to be honest with you, I spent the last 10 minutes chasing kittens, a feral cat laid kittens in my garage.
Okay.
And somebody came by to get them, and they were running in the freaking rat. Anyway.
All right. Well, let's not get back into the stories about chickens that you raised to be chased by dogs or something like that. I don't remember, but
they're
anyway.
Quail, thank you very much.
Okay. They're all the same to me.
But no, I was super excited that you guys are doing this. I remember the first time I met you in person, well, all three of you, but Jim, you and I had worked together for quite a little bit and hadn't met you in person. And my first trip to LA, I landed and you're like, hey, why don't you come to my house? And I walked into the basement and you guys were like brainstorming Real Crime Profile when I got there. So I actually got to watch. I tell the story all the time that I got to watch you guys record your very first episode of Real Crime Profile.
That's right. And the basement was the studio, just for those who are wondering that I don't dwell in the basement at Jim's house. He had a studio.
It seemed like a basement
there.
To me.
I know. It's more of a, second level below, it's still above ground, but it's below grade on part of the house. But anyway, the point is that you helped us get it started and you were very inspirational. But also, Laura was just talking about when you interviewed Laura and I about Jay's interview and how, you let us listen to it. We both took notes. We didn't discuss it. And then we went right in and you just started asking us questions. And Laura said, what did you say at the end, Laura?
That you were blown away. Cause I literally just listened to the interview, Bob, because I remembered when I was giving the shout out to Rabia and everyone else, I suddenly remembered that Jim and I did an interview with you about Jay Wilde's recorded police interview. And just didn't remember the detail, particularly the end where you said, wow, I was just blown away by what Laura and Jim said. I didn't know what they were going to say. They didn't confer or corroborate and talk about what they both found, but this blows the case wide open. And you make that statement right at the end. And it was very powerful actually hearing that, particularly in light of the motion that was made public yesterday, where the state are requesting that Adnan Syed's conviction is vacated and that he should go home immediately. Obviously that the investigation should continue. So, yes, yesterday was a pretty amazing day. I was listening to Rabia and what she had to say about it. And I saw that you had chimed in on the social as well. And I included you in our post today. I didn't give you a shout out on the BBC interview, mind, but I'm giving you a big shout out now. I'm giving you a big shout out now, friend, of, you were on the case as well. And sometimes it takes a lot of people to, bring light to things. And it seems that there's irrespective of what people think, because this is the case where lots of people have very strong views about whether he's guilty or innocent, irrespective of that. He didn't receive a fair trial because key information was withheld from the defense team that may well have had a key impact on the jury's decision. That's my view anyway. And that's certainly what the state's view is now.
Well, I just think that the most amazing part about this is how it's like one of the first cases, if not the first case, where like a truly crowdsourced investigation, publicly crowdsourced investigation, primarily from Undisclosed, some of the work I did on my podcast, you guys were part of that, coming in and chiming in. We brought in people from all over the place, and almost everyone that's worked on this case has worked on it free of charge. I mean, you guys are professionals of what you do and volunteered your time to give your input. And I think all of that, it's amazing to me in kind of a icky time in our world right now. It's just like, it's really cool to reflect on like the kindness of people and the willingness to help make a difference from so many different people around the world. And you guys have always been a part of that with Real Crime Profile. And should point out that interview that you guys did in that case, where you, in my opinion, just proved without question that Jay Wilde actually knows nothing about this crime. was the same trip. It was 2 days after you recorded your first true crime profile. I came back and we went into the not basement studio and recorded that. So it's all right. Come full circle.
But it's real crime profile. You said true crime profile. Can you just say real crime profile?
Most of my shows start with true crime, Jim. So it's just kind of on a
nice way of fucking up for us, Bob. Thanks a lot, Bob.
We won't invite you back, Bob.
Tune into true crime profile every Wednesday.
Whoever these amateurs are. But actually, Bob, it's nice that you said that because in the episode you gave us a shout out too that, you know, Jim and Laura have done this all for free. We weren't paid. We did go through a lot of material. And that's also sometimes people don't realize that there are a lot of people like Jim and I and others who give of our time. We do it pro bono and we want to help. And that is a very big positive that so many of us actually want to help and shed light in places where there's darkness and there shouldn't be. So we'll see what happens with Adnan Syed. I know Rabia et al, no one's holding their breath as yet until a judge obviously makes a decision and it goes back to the court for a decision. And of course, the timeline for that is unknown.
Because Bob, you've been down this road before, right? Where your hopes have gotten up. And so what does that feel like for you to have to persevere ups and downs? And
It's why I raise quail out in my, even you guys see where I live. I hide, there's no one around me. Like I have over the last 7 years really had to learn to unplug at times, like just to finally walk out of the office, get outside, unplug from it, because it wears you out. And you guys know that it's emotionally very taxing.
Of course, our hearts go out for Hay's family too. I mean, we're always thinking about her too. But I just remember after listening to Serial and getting hooked on Hay's story and Adnan's story, searching for something else to listen to and finding Serial Dynasty and listening to who is this Bajagaloop talking about this case. And then to Bajagaloop. And then to my shock, you say, yeah, I'm trying to get this FBI profiler on my show. His name is Jim Clemente. And I was like, wait, my Jim Clemente? This cannot be. So it's just so weird, the connections. And circles.
Talking about circles. I mean, yeah, I obviously Serial was the first podcast in crime that I listened to. And when I listened to it, I heard Sarah say, could somebody this charismatic and good looking actually be a killer? And I was like, are you asking that question seriously? Have you ever heard of Bundy? But anyway, so I offered my services and they never called me back, but I offered the services of any of the retired FBI profilers, but they never reached back. But just recently they did call me for their next season, their upcoming season of Serial, which is on another case, which I'm not allowed to disclose right now, but at least, yeah, since then, think of how much has happened and think how many cases that we've been able to weigh in on and actually influence. We're going to talk about some of that in a bit, but
let's not, you know, for my small part before my battery dies and I leave you guys, I also let's not leave out Lisa, who's been the voice of the people for 400 episodes. Lisa, you're my favorite part of the podcast. I listen.
She doesn't like being called that though, Bob. She doesn't like being called that. She's a lay person. She's a lay person.
I am definitely not the voice of any people, but thank you. And now I'm blushing and I need to go lay down because you gave me a nice compliment.
We're all the lay people. So we took on Truth and Justice, we kind of took your character on Real Crime Profile, and we had like Zach Weaver, who's on our follow-ups on Truth and Justice. It was because from listening to Real Crime Profile,
You're a role model.
Yeah, I was like there's some, like having someone in the room that is a, as you call yourself, a lay person to ask what is what the other 100,000 people listening, the questions they want to ask that we don't always think of is I'm not an expert in anything.
Yeah,
but you're wonderful, Lisa. You're you were the first person to ever make me feel important, because my first time I ever left the sticks and walked into Jim's not basement studio, and I still remember you looking at me going, that Bob? Oh, you freaked out a little bit and made me feel like it. So I thought my whole trip to LA was like everywhere I go, people are going to be like, oh, look, it's Bob Rupp from that podcast. It was just you, but you were the first person I saw.
It was the weirdest thing to see you walk through the door. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I told Lisa, yeah, Bob's coming and he's going to come out and, you know, be on our podcast. And she didn't respond. She didn't say anything. And I was like, oh, okay. And then when you walked in, I thought she was going to, you know, die right there. I mean, pass out at least, because she was like, oh, she was hyperventilating.
I was fangirling. Anyway, your wife is so sweet to not, you know, knock my chops out for how I fangirl over you. But anyway, you're just a wonderful, wonderful person. You've helped so many people and you're just the standard bearer, really.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to call you kind of a friend. Semi-friend.
Just kind of, Lisa.
I'm sorry.
No, she's just trying not to be, she's trying not to be presumptuous.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway.
We're all friends here.
Thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome. I love all three of you guys. You're doing amazing work. And please invite me back for the 800th episode.
We won't see you till then. See you.
All right.
No.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Bob, for coming. You're busy. And thank you for being part of our 400th episode and our first. Yep.
Yes,
that's right. Take care and congratulations.
Take care, Bob.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was great.
I need to go, like, y'all lay down. I'm verklempt and I'm fakakta and I'm everything. You got so many things, Laura. You should tell them about the R. Kelly of it all and the everything of it all.
Well, I think probably now is a nice point. Maybe do we want to hear from some of our listeners and then we can get into, you know, some of the things of our cases again. But, you know, fantastic. For me, I also want to give a massive shout out to all of our listeners. As I said,
absolutely,
we didn't know if one person would listen. So to have so many people and so many loyal listeners who've been with us right from the very beginning. So
and around the world.
Yeah.
It's great to have people across the United States and the UK. But to know that we're one of the top-ranked podcasts in Greece, for example, that's really amazing. And
yeah,
Australia
crazy.
And New Zealand and in Southeast Asia, we really appreciate all of you who listen across the country and around the world, because every single person who is taking the time to actually learn what actually happens in cases and to get behind the scenes on some of the things that are presented on television and other media platforms to actually learn what is truly going on. Taking the time to do that means you're going to be better educated and you're going to be better able to help yourself in your life and the people you love, which is a wonderful thing.
Guys, 400 episodes. That's fantastic. Well done, usually you lot. Jim, what the flip? Catholic Church, disaster, honestly. Laura, Survivor, thriver, one of the best phrases ever. I'm sort of lucky in that I haven't been in that position, but a lot of my girlfriends have been. So I really appreciate the thrive term because they have all thrived. Lisa, love your compassionate nature and the softness of your words. Good luck for the future. And here's to another at least 400 episodes. Thanks, guys.
We have so many amazing fans, you guys.
What's her name?
Melissa. So I'm just leaving the
thank you so much. And Melissa, am I wrong that she's in New Zealand? Is that
somewhere down there? Yeah,
I'm an Australian.
Yeah.
Okay, Australia, New Zealand. Yes, I'm sorry. I hope that doesn't insult you. But
we'll cut it.
Wow, what a wonderful thing to say, or what wonderful things to say. We really appreciate it, and we're sorry to hear about your friends, but thank you for being their friends and being supportive. That's a wonderful thing too.
Happy 400th episode, guys. Now, I found out about you when my very good friend told me there was a victim-centric true crime podcast hosted by a lady named Lisa Z, which is important because I'm also named Lisa Z, but also a powerhouse feminist warrior and a retired FBI agent. And I listened, and honestly, I was hooked from day one. I haven't missed a single episode because it's that good. I learned so much, and I just appreciate everything you guys do. And an extra shout out to Laura and Jim. You guys are honestly my rock stars, truly my rock stars. You are badass and relentless in your advocacy work. And I just think you're so inspiring and you do so much to help the world. So thank you for that. And thank you to all three of you for creating such quality content. And I look forward to more episodes in the future. Bye.
Hey everybody, Dean from Down Under here. I just wanted to take this opportunity to record a short message and congratulate RCP on their 400th episode. Wow, 400. Lisa, Jim and Laura, unbelievable. It just seems like yesterday that I think I stumbled onto them on the very first case, which was the death of Teresa Holbach and recapping the Netflix series, I think it was Netflix, Making a Murderer, quickly followed up by the deaths of Nicole Simpson-Brown and Ron Goldman and the offender, that guy, let's not name him. And then over time, as they covered other cases, some high profile, some not, it doesn't matter because they're all human beings that, as a result of the nature of the pod, sadly, have lost their lives. But I love the way that they put the focus on the victims. That's very common today, but think back to a few years ago and it wasn't. I think that RCP was really the pod that kind of started that focusing on the victims of the crimes rather than the offenders, and rightly so, and the rejection of the monikers that are commonly used for those offenders because it's newsworthy. But behind the news, there are real people involved, real people lost their lives, and real people are impacted by the loss of their loved ones. And that's what I really love about RCP is they take you behind the scenes, and yes, for all the forensic analysis by Jim and Laura, and from the real-world observations of Lisa, it's a celebration also of the people that are gone, and respect for those victims is what makes the show special. So congratulations, guys. 400 down, and hopefully there's another 400 at least to come. I know I'll be tuning in. Thanks so much.
Hi, Laura, Lisa, and Jim. It's Hernan Lopez, founder of Wondery. I wanted to congratulate you all for your 400th episode. I can't believe it almost feels like yesterday when Lisa called me and told me about your show that was just getting started, but already was finding a voice in helping tell the stories from the victim's perspective. One of the things I'm proudest of that you guys did was you helped so many women, and men for that matter, detect the dirty Johns, quote unquote, in their lives before it was too late. And that's one of the things that I love have been able to be a part of at Wondery. I miss you guys. Good luck. And here's to 400 episodes more. Thank you.
Now, when he says Lisa, he meant he meant Aliza Rosen, who we definitely owe a thanks to, because I think that he was part of connecting, because Aliza Rosen was working with you all on a project and she met. But he is such a wonderful man.
What an amazing thing. Yeah. Fantastic.
We miss you too, Hernan. And yes, yeah. Dirty John, my goodness. You know, and Hernan and I have many conversations thereafter about Dirty Johns and helping other people, the intervention and prevention. That's exactly why Deborah Newell wanted to share her story. So I pay tribute to Deborah Newell when Hernan says about Dirty John. Our coverage is one of my favorite cases, and I'll explain why in a bit. But I'm really, you know, bowled over to hear from Hernan. He started, or he believed in us at the outset, and has been a key part of everything we've done, certainly for the first, 4 or 5 years. So thank you, Hernan.
One person we haven't thanked yet, and we really have to, is Paul Sullivan, who was our editor, our producer, our website maker, our everything 24/7. Paul was available. When we were starting out, we really didn't know. I mean, the technology was kind of new to us on how we were going to do this. And he worked his butt off while still having a full-time job. So thank you. Thank you, Paul, for the endless hours.
Yes, thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paulie.
Figuring out Art 19, figuring out ads and all kinds of things.
And all the time while he's doing his own daily podcast. That's what's amazing about
right.
it.
Right. Yes. So we miss you, and we're glad you're on to better pastures, being a severe special needs teacher, which he's just so dear with these kids. I wish you could see him. But anyway,
another person I'd like to thank is the person who wrote and created the music, our theme music, who is, and I always love saying his name, Simba Sumba. And he's from Zimbabwe, and he lives in Zimbabwe now. He was here in LA for a while and worked with us and did some engineering work for us at the beginning. And he created the song, our theme song. And so every time we hear that, I think of him.
So iconic.
And, I miss him too. Yeah. It's so cool to have that music now. So I don't know, well known around the world as our theme song. So thank you, Simba, Simba Tsumba.
Cheers, Simba.
Should we talk about our favorite episodes, or is that where we're at?
Yeah, whatever you guys want to do.
All right. Anybody want to start?
So I'm going to give just an overview of some of my favorites. I mean, I did go back and try and look at all the cases that we've covered. And with each one, I was like, oh, yeah, that's my favorite. Oh, no, that's my favorite because of, you know, those real world action. Oh, no, this is definitely my favorite. So I did have trouble. And my favorites for different reasons. But when we started out doing the People versus O.J. Simpson and Nicole Brown Simpson, it was one of our first cases. And it just really resonated with me. It was a case I thought I knew. But as we dug in, I realized I didn't know huge amounts of detail of what happened. And we were following the FX show, but I hope we did Nicole Brown Simpson and her family proud. We probably still have more to say about it because there's always more to say about that case. But that was certainly one of my top, along with Dirty John. Dirty John, because, you know, we were given an opportunity to interview Chris Goffard. And I still recall I was in London at the time and having listened to it was sort of like the raw audio, wasn't it, that we heard before the show actually dropped. And I was just blown away by it, blown away by the production value, but the story more so. And I really thought it was going to end a certain way, as most of the cases that I work end with a woman being killed. And so the story of what happened to Deborah and her family really captured, you know, my heart. And the fact that when it did air, that she was blamed. And that's what I see in most of my cases. So being able to firstly question Chris and say to him, this case is about coercive control, and him say, I've never heard of that, and then explain it for the first time, you know, setting on Real Crime Profile, but with Chris Goffard, and explain it. I still remember him saying, I wish I'd met you before, and I would have done things and said things slightly differently. But from that case, it's led us to do the documentary together, Dirty John, The Dirty Truth, as well as create law change in California. There's now a law, it's within the family law, coercive control is included, to changing laws in Connecticut and other parts of the US. And for me to be a friend, actually, to Deborah, Deborah and her daughters through my baby shower, you know, I feel that I have really gotten to know them as a family, and they really are lovely people. So they've become a big part of my life, all from Hernan Lopez saying, oh, you should interview this journalist, Chris Goffard from the LA Times. So real life advocacy has happened as a consequence of that, and friendship. So Dirty John, and then my other two top ones are put in that category are the Jess Hill interview, See What You Made Me Do. I just really enjoyed interviewing and talking with Jess on Real Crime Profile. She's a brilliant woman, and giving her book a worldwide audience was a fantastic thing to do, and explaining coercive control in more detail with another change maker and leader. And then The Teacher's Pet, which we've covered and we are going to say much more about. This was Lynette Dawson's case that I really wanted to cover. And of course, that's been back in the news more recently, but, you know, ostensibly because we did real life work on it. And she was a missing person. And Hedley Thomas, I think we all felt, did a fantastic job on his podcast. And it basically led to Chris Dawson being arrested and charged. And he's recently been found guilty of Lynette's murder. And you know, I believe that The Teacher's Pet played a clear role in that. But also I've spoken with the various family members, and they feel that we played a role too in what we did and what we said and creating pressure to ensure that the police acted. And, you know, that's fantastic. And I know lots of people did have asked for our episodes. And I did have a conversation with one of the detectives just before the trial was beginning. And he wanted us to take down those episodes to ensure Chris Dawson got a fair trial. Now, as I discussed with him, and he well knew there was no jurisdiction for us to take that down, but we did it out of courtesy because we obviously wanted Chris Dawson to have a fair trial as well. So we did remove those episodes. And the good news is we will be reposting those episodes for all of our listeners to be able to listen to. And I'm just so pleased for Lynette's family. I know it's been a huge roller coaster for them, particularly even when the judge was reading out his decision. He went through in such micro detail of pretty much every piece of evidence, every witness, and it was a marathon verdict. And I know it was a roller coaster for them, but I believe the right decision has been made. So big shout out to Lynette's family.
And Laura, tell the listeners what you found out about really one of the reasons why they actually asked us to take down our episodes.
Jim and I are professionals and our opinion does matter in terms of our area of expertise. So we were asked to remove it so that we didn't have that impact on the trial and Chris Dawson could have a fair trial. But I know that the family and others went to dinner after Chris Dawson was found guilty, and the detective and others said very positive things about Real Crime Profile and what a positive impact our coverage had. Sometimes we don't know the impact of what we do on Real Crime Profile, right? It's not always that obvious or that tangible, but I did get some feedback that it did make a profound difference. So I just want to, you know, relay that to Jim and Lisa as well, because like I said, we don't always know the impact that we have, but I know that lots of people do listen. I know lots of professionals listen, and some will email and say, you know, I changed the way I thought about this case, or I thought about you and Jim and you said A, B or C, so I did something differently. And we don't capture those things and talk about that on Real Crime Profile, but they're all positive outcomes from what we do here.
Right, exactly.
Minors. So he's already in prison for 30 years. That's what he was sentenced to. And this is an additional. And that happened this week as well. And you'll remember, Jim and Lisa, we talked multiple times on Real Crime Profile before really anyone else was talking about R. Kelly and, you know, ensuring that people understood his history. That was before the Lifetime show came out and so on. So that's been a case that has also been one for me that we've talked about, but we've also been watching to see what happens in terms of accountability and responsibility. And now finally, R. Kelly is exactly where he belongs. Robert Kelly, I even feel funny even saying R. Kelly as if he's this kind of, you know, the pop celebrity part goes first. He is just a man. He did terrible things to many girls and women. And, you know, I felt really pleased that the day of accountability has really come for so many. I think it was a moment for all survivors actually across the world. So that's the last update, as well as Lynette Dawson, R. Kelly. There's been lots of very interesting and really good things going on with cases that we've talked about before. So 400 episodes, we'll see whether we get to another 400 more. But certainly, thank you very much, Jim and Lisa, for this 400. You know, what's different for me is motherhood. I have a baby now. I had the golden doodle before that, Miss Beatrice. But now I'm a mama to Rafi. It is my biggest achievement. And that's the thing that goes foremost before all my credentials. And my little bub needs me now. So I'll be jumping off. But thank you very much, Jim and Lisa, my co-hosts, and at times where I haven't been able to jump on, you've both jumped in, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. So thank you very much.
You too, and our love goes out to you and to Umbe and to little Rafi, who's getting bigger every day. And I love seeing the little videos of him being so ingenious, like when he broke out of his little playpen.
He is very clever and very creative. And let me just tell you, he's in the 99 percentile on height. Well, for on everything. He is very smart and figures out things like the playpen, getting the zipper open to the Mission Impossible music, which a lot of people loved watching.
I was really struggling to figure out which two or three episodes I would say are my favorite. And when you're talking about positive outcomes or how we affect people, I think the case of Dylan Farrow is probably one of my favorites. And I had been for years when I taught interview and interrogation, when I taught deception detection in the FBI and also across the country and around the world, I would constantly use Dylan Farrow's statement as an example of what a truthful statement filled with indicators of veracity is like, because she talked in her statement about emotional things. She talked about multiple senses. She talked about how she felt at the time and visceral reactions she had to re-seeing things that occurred. And all of those were indicators to me that this was a truthful person who's telling a truthful statement. And then to have the opportunity to tell that to the world, to actually explain why I believe her and why the people who are just blindly following a iconic entertainer and they're not actually looking at the human side of it and trying to take away her voice. I was so proud of her, of Dylan Farrow, for being able to stand up, and so proud of her mother and her brother for standing there and being there for her, that I believe that being part of that and getting that message out, and then to find out that Dylan and her mother heard our coverage and were very, very pleased that we were standing up for them and that we were actually talking truth and talking facts as opposed to just dealing with emotion and blind devotion to an entertainer. So that, I would say, is definitely in the top one or two of my episodes that we covered over the course of the last 400. I don't know if you wanted to say anything more about that, Laura, Lisa.
It was definitely in my top 10, Jim. And, you know, Priscilla reaching out to say that they had been listening, a close friend of both Dylan and Amir. And she messaged me a number of times just saying how powerful it was and that they felt seen and, you know, really heard and understood. So, yes, I think that was very powerful. And for other survivors listening as well, because it's that ripple on the pond, isn't it, for others?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she was an inspiration for me, and it's important that everyone who has gone through something like that, it's not everyone's going to speak out. Not everyone's going to be able to do what I've been able to do, been lucky enough to do, you know, to go after the guy who molested me. And now, all these years later, actually sue the Catholic Church for what they allowed to happen over the course of decades of this guy molesting boys at Catholic schools and Catholic camps and Catholic gyms. So it's important that everybody understand everybody has their own path, and just know that if something like this happened to you, it's a crime that was committed against you, and there's no blame at all on the victims. Never. Series of episodes that we did, and that was following and being the sister podcast for Escape at Dannemora. And that came about sort of in a circuitous way, but I loved it because not only did Ben Stiller do an amazing job putting that series together and directing it, but it was so well done. I mean, I was amazed at the cinematography and the access they had, and also the fact that we were able to watch it before it was presented to the
public. Read the scripts too. That was incredible.
Too. And they gave us access to the real people who were depicted in the actual show. And of course, then Ben came on and we were able to interview him after as our last episode. And Ben and I had met a few times over the course of my life, and a couple times it was kind of crazy because the first time we met was the night before my bone marrow transplant, and we were at a Bruce Springsteen concert in Washington, D.C., and I was not supposed to be outside of the hospital, and my sister snuck me out, and my brother got me into the concert, and my other brother got me backstage and then put me like in the third row, and I was sitting next to Meg Ryan and Ben Stiller and Ethan Hawke and I can't remember what his name is. He's a very famous runner from Houston. He and his sister have all sorts of Carl Lewis. Carl Lewis was sitting next to us too. Anyway, it was just
pretty big
like,
name there, Jim.
He was. I know. I forgot.
Carl Lewis.
Right. But what it was crazy was here I am. Like, I'm supposed to be in the hospital, like getting ready for my bone marrow transplant the next day. And I'm wearing a mask and I'm wearing my FBI hat. And I gave it to, I was having this conversation with Ben Stiller. Is that real? And I said, yeah, I'm an FBI agent, but I'm going through a bone marrow transplant right now. And anyway, I gave him my hat, right? And then years later, when Tim and I were working with Robert De Niro on a project, he was shooting Meet the Fockers or, you know, one of the various sequels, I think, to that. And so he said, oh, I got to shoot something. So let's go down to the set. And we go down to the set and there's Ben. And he's like, hi, it's great to meet you. And I said, oh, I met you before at the Bruce Springsteen concert on the night before my bone marrow transplant. And he goes, you lived? like,
you
yeah,
did indeed.
Lived. Yeah, I did. So it was funny. So anyway, then, you know, of course, we met again.
An unconscious utterance, Jim.
I know, right, exactly. But it was funny being able to talk to all these people and learn how he went and sat down with Governor Cuomo to, you know, ask him, please, can you please let us shoot at the actual prison? And he got permission to do it. And that made it just made that whole series just so much more real to be able to shoot in the place where it happened. So anyway, I'm on the pure entertainment, but also we got to talk about why somebody who worked in a prison would act this way and how convicts are able to, because they're literally locked in a cell and they have very little in terms of distractions, they can think about things and they could put together very elaborate plans and among them can manipulate people and make them believe that they are, you know, the basically diamond in their life and that they've changed their life and that they can, you know, do amazing things with them. This is what happens. And we've seen it happen again and again and again, even since that case happened. So for me, that was one of the fun in a series of episodes that we were able to do. And so that's, I kind of wanted to just juxtapose those two. And then actually, I know, Laura, you were really involved in this as well, but the Gabby Petito case and the coverage we did of that, because at the same time that we were covering it, I was appearing on CNN every night for at least 2 weeks in a row. I got to speak for about 3 or 4 minutes. And, you know, literally, you're only able to scratch the surface. But I was able to. What was great about it was because I was really paying attention to it and we were covering it here, I was able to also tell the world about what I learned from Laura, which was the aspects of coercive control that she has developed an expertise in. And I was able to recognize it as soon as I saw the video, the first video that came out of the police officers stopping Gabby and her murderer, Beyonce. Of course, that was before she was murdered. And the fact is that I called out those police officers. I said they got it wrong and that they actually put her in a position where she was at extreme risk. And by falling for the crap that her murderer fiance gave the cops, you know, and literally, I think it was just that one cop who literally had his own biases and completely superimpose those on this case. You know, he had an N of one in his study, as opposed to understanding how much, how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people have to go through this, have suffered coercive control over the course of decades and centuries. It's been around forever, I'm sure. And he just let his own personal biases rule the day. And he basically changed the direction of that case. And I believe at least kept her in a position where she was vulnerable. And unfortunately, she was murdered. Not that her fiance didn't have all the responsibility for that murder. He absolutely did. But it's unfortunate that an opportunity to intervene was lost because these police officers did not have the proper training in coercive control.
Right, absolutely.
So our ability to cover that and the opportunity to teach on Real Crime Profile people around the world in much greater detail than we could actually reach by doing 4-minute interviews, even day after day for a couple of weeks, it's still not as good as just the in-depth nature of what we're able to do here on Real Crime Profile. So thank you, Laura and Lisa, for being my co-hosts and giving me the opportunity to participate with you in doing these good public works.
Well, we are so lucky to have you. I'm so lucky that you said yes. You know, what you mentioned CNN, and that's exactly, Jim, what my thinking was when I was, you know, first asking you about doing a podcast, because I'd seen you on CNN and you had such a constricted time frame to express yourself. And in that platform, you had to be so, you know, just conservative, you know what I'm saying?
In a way,
you know, and you really couldn't be the passionate person, the expressive person that you really are. So,
unless I'm on with Don Lemon. Don always lets me. Yeah. Don and I go back many years, and, you know, and yeah, he actually and I have a great rapport. And when I go on his show, it's really, I think it's a lot more, I don't know, freewheeling. And I feel like he actually, sometimes the host of those shows has a predetermined idea of what they want to ask and so on.
Yeah, they have to.
I know, but they also have people on because they're experts. And if they could listen to those people, sometimes the questions can be better and people can be informed more. And I think that's what Don did with me, because we've had this sort of rapport for many years. And so I think we understand each other and we're able to go back and forth a lot easier.
And you also led a huge campaign on CNN not naming the offender, at least not using their handy dandy moniker, you know, that so many outlets use. But if I could just say a couple of my favorite episodes, like Laura said, going through the list, I was kind of overwhelmed by all the things that we talked about. But I think when we covered the murder of Meredith Kircher, I think for a lot of our listeners, it really changed their minds about who really murdered her and who has borne the brunt of scorn for all of these years. So I think that
And those are two different people, by the way.
That's right. That's right. So that was important, but really when and when we did the Keepers, Jim, just, I think because of the personal just connection we had to that story and how you were so generous in telling your story about your sexual abuse led me to, for the first time ever, I'd never talked about it before in private, certainly not in public. And it's really you who helped me, you know, be able to talk about that. And then Laura and I went to CrimeCon and we sat down with Gemma Hoskins, who was in The Keepers. And she told us even more horrific things that didn't make it into the show. So that was really important. But I think I always come back to this one guest we had, and that was Zoe Dronfeld, who of course is Laura's friend. And, you know, both of them have worked so hard to change laws in the UK about stalking and the registry. But when Zoe sat down with us and told us her story, listen, I've heard many, many stories by actors talking about surviving a serial abuser and surviving a horrific attack. I've never really heard a real person tell me their the injuries, the stab wounds, the things that they had to survive, you know,
right.
That just really affected me, and how she could so calmly talk about it. It really has changed me on how, when I look for truth in an actor trying to, you know, say a similar, you know, dramatic material, I really look like, you know, she's my bar now about what somebody who's really walked the walk and survived. Right. So that's, you know, that's, I hate to say favorite because it's, you know, but that one really sticks with me. And look, in these 6 years, you know, a lot has happened to us. You know, we've had, you know, we've lost loved ones. We've gained loved ones. You know, so much has happened. And through it all, our listeners have been there for us. I know, Jim and Laura, you know, we've gotten hundreds upon hundreds of private emails of people with their own stories, of their own tragedies, of their own abuse, domestic abuse, sex abuse, their sisters, their mothers, their fathers, people sharing with us pages from their lives. And I'm just so grateful for them, for walking with us through these years and having stirring conversations on Facebook. We have a very healthy Facebook group and threads that everybody, you know, chimes in their opinions and their life experiences. So thank you all so much for being there for us.
Absolutely. And I think one case that I think we can all agree on that we covered, and a lot of it was incredibly difficult, our coverage of the many victims that were subject to the horrific sexual assaults and rapes by Bill Cosby. And the fact that we were able to interview Nikki Weisenstein Egan about Jason Cosby, and that I went with Laura to actually see her speak and meet a bunch of the many of the victims that had come forward, Bill Cosby, and in particular, Lily Bernard, who then came on our podcast. What an amazing woman, and all the women that I met and spoke to, and our guests on Real Crime Profile. It's just so amazing what they've had to put up with, much like the victims of Michael Jackson had to put up with. When you're dealing with an iconic offender, that it just makes it that much more difficult to actually come forward and to have people believe you. But that makes the people that do come forward even more heroic. You're all heroes, and even if you didn't come forward, you're a hero for surviving and thriving. And that's a message that we all agree on here at Real Crime Profile. And we want to make sure that you understand. Doesn't ruin your life. Still go on and have a wonderful life. It may be difficult. There will be ups and downs, but you can deal with it. And we're here to support you.
Well said. Well, thank you, everyone, for sticking with us all these years. And if you're just joining us, you're new to the Real Crime Profile Party, you have a huge back catalog to go back and listen to. And you'll hear, you know, we learned a lot along the way, Jim, right? I mean, I learned that I can't say, and, you know, and, you know, every time when you're empathetically listening to somebody in person, it's very different than when you're hearing someone on a podcast. So we've all had to learn. And I just want to shout out to our listener, Louise, who always is chastising me for swearing. I hope she notices that I'm not saying fuck as fucking much as I fucking used to.
But I'm still saying fuck, so it doesn't matter. But we're only saying, I mean, we don't say it. We say it in anger against bad people.
That's right. We and we're adults. Yeah. Hey, it's our show.
And we can that's say whatever the fuck what we want. The word is meant for.
Right.
For really bad people. And so it's also just meant for every other word when you come from the Bronx.
That's
so
right.
I can't help it.
That's
where my genes are from. So anyway, Lisa and Laura, it's been so great, this journey. And I hope that our continued journey is as successful, and I hope that we are able to help more and more people as time goes on. And that makes every bit of sacrifice that we make to do this show makes it all worthwhile tenfold.
Absolutely. And so let's just thank our editor, Nick, who's going to be cutting this together. Thank you, Nick, for all you do for us. Do you want to take us out, Jim?
No, why don't you take us out?
All right. For our 400th, for now, this is Real Crime Profile signing off.
Real Crime Profile was created by Jim Clementi, Laura Richards, and Lisa Zambetti. Produced by Laura Richards, Lisa Zambetti, Jim Clementi, and XG Productions, and distributed by Wondery. Editing by Nick Jaworski at Podcast Monster. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba.